This is the Big 550 KTRS. I'm Paul Harris, which means it must be Friday afternoon. Yeah, oh, it is. And this portion of the show is brought to you by ORIC, 7 locally owned and operated stores, O-R-I-C-K, ORIC.com. And now here to talk about movies and what's happening in the clubs this weekend, here's Mr. Joe Hipperson.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
How are you, Joe?
I am doing lovely. Paul Harris, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I know we have a bunch of movies to get to today, including one that neither of us has seen, but one that I'm really looking forward to called Before Midnight, which I've mentioned before. It's the third in a series, started 18 years ago. Before Sunrise, most romantic movie I've ever seen in my life, with Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. And then 9 years later, they did a sequel called Before Sunset, which was very romantic as well. And now 9 years later, it's called Before Midnight, and I'm going to go see it this weekend. We'll talk about it next week.
Okay.
I just want to mention it's opening. I think it's Plaza Frontenac this
weekend. So it's like an art house type release.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that in a snooty way.
Well, I understand.
I know you love the Plaza Frontenac, and you dig it.
Well, I like many of the movies that come there, but I actually spend more of my life at Ronnie's now in South County because that's where a lot of these screenings are, which is where I saw one of the two movies we're going to talk about today, including the first one, which is Man of Steel.
Yes, Man of Steel. Now, I would love to say that I'll admit it. I have a soft spot for the movie Superman Returns. There are a million things I could say that were wrong with Superman Returns, but I still have a really soft spot of love for
that. Was the 2006 version of that.
That was Bryan Singer showing the world that he was in love with Richard Donner, mm-hmm. basically, and did his best version of what Superman 2 probably should have been. And there's a whole thing we could go into with that. But
did you like the original Superman movies with Christopher Reeve?
Loved them. I mean, as a kid, I really, really loved them.
You mean 1 and 2 you loved. After that, it was off the cliff.
Listen, I had a few nightmares about the imagery is confusing, but Superman 3, Superman and Richard Pryor, basically, yeah. There was this weird machine, and this woman walked into this machine and turned into like a robot cyborg thing. As a kid, that freaked me out. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had nightmares about that device. Other than that, I have no recollection of Superman 3, except I think when he turned into a bad Superman, his hair was blonder. I remember that.
I don't remember
vividly.
That.
Vividly.
No. I don't know.
Yeah. No, it was weird. Like when Spock gets angry against the Fu Manchu, you know, like bad Spock.
Wouldn't you agree with me that Superman 2 is probably one of the best sequels?
As far as delivering everything you wanted right after seeing the first Superman?
Yeah.
Yes!
Yeah.
You got everything you wanted, but
I mean, it's no Teen Wolf 2, but it's good.
Hey.
Which is the one with the spinning mirrors?
The spinning mirrors.
In the sky, isn't that
that's the first one and the second one.
Yeah,
the Phantom Zone.
Yeah, I watched them, but no.
He's a Marvel Comics guy, not a DC Comics guy.
Wow. I will say that.
That's where General Zod and the two other people were sent up into the Phantom Zone, which they are also in this new movie, Man of Steel.
Did you know that Gene Wilder last night, 80-year-old Gene Wilder last night, just made an appearance in New York and was asked a question about Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yes.
This is an absolute true story.
I saw this, yeah.
He spun and just said it was an insult.
Yes.
His exact quote was, it was an insult.
Mm-hmm.
That is exactly where I'm going when it comes to Man of Steel.
We should explain, Gene Wilder starred in the original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Right.
And the remake with Johnny Depp done by Tim Burton later, I agree with Gene Wilder in this. It was an insult to an all-time children's classic.
Yeah. Well, a lot of things about Man of Steel made me think of The Amazing Spider-Man. Made me think, well, okay, I get it. In the comic book world, there's a bunch of different variations. There's Batman Beyond. There's a bunch of different variations on your, you know, superheroes. But it's like when you do an adaptation of any book, novel, comic book, video game into a film, you have to appeal to the masses, all right? But the masses already know Superman. They know his origin story.
Yes.
They know golden Americana. They understand the Kents and then the good old farm life. They get that already.
Yep.
All right? Batman Begins was one of the biggest gambles ever to redo an origin that they've already done time and time again.
I am tired of superhero origin stories. Like you just said, we know the Superman story. There's nobody who's going to this movie going, I don't know how Superman started. Was he from around here? Yeah. It's just a regular guy. He got radiated or something. No, nobody doesn't know the Superman story. You don't have to take us all the way back to Krypton.
Well, or which I love that it's called Krypton, and the original Marlon Brando always called it Krypton. I absolutely love it because he has to be Marlon Brando. He just has to do that. See, they do little changes in Man of Steel to where, you know, you've got Jor-El, all right? You've got the main man. You've got, well, Russell Crowe stepping in for the Marlon Brando part we all know. Mm-hmm. They add a little bit of difference to his character portrayal. Therefore, they justify, in my opinion, showing us more of the same origin because they're just tweaking characters a bit. So we're going to see what else General Zod could do if he's not an old English guy. You know what I mean?
We did not need it.
No, they did not. And first off, I'm all over the place on this, but it's a Superman movie. General Zod's in it. He never asked anyone to kneel before him, but still, Michael Shannon cast. Paul Harris, you said over and over again, a hero or an action, any kind of movie is only as good as its villain.
Yes.
Michael Shannon, I thought, blew as the villain, General Zod.
I agree.
He's just, he looks like he should have been General Zod's thug buddy.
Yes.
You know? He didn't appear, even on screen, to have any real menace or threat.
Plus, no chemistry and no sense of humor.
Right.
The General Zod in the original Superman 2, they wrote some clever stuff for him to say.
Yeah, they did. And they also gave it to the right kind of actor. I mean, yes. Terrence Stamp. I mean, he could just look at you and out-act anybody.
Right.
And there's a great bit of back and forth with him and Gene Hackman, and it's really, really cool because you get two powerhouse actors. One thing that I did not like about this movie was the Lois Lane, Clark Kent, Superman. Okay, Superman, Lois Lane chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like it.
No chemistry at all.
No, it was almost as if we're supposed to see chemistry. There's supposed to be that because obviously Lois Lane has to fall for Superman. So we just assume there's going to be chemistry. But just because you got a guy with an S on his outfit doesn't mean he's really Superman, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, and by the way, Amy Adams plays Lois Lane. She's a great actress.
Excellent. No, she's beyond hot as nails, man.
Yeah.
I even get excited when I watch the Muppet movie because, you know, Amy Adams, you know, that whole Me Party song. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on in that Me Party song, man.
All
you
right, look at calm the down. Calm yeah. down. Settle down.
All right. Amy Adams, Lois Lane, got a clip. I'm going to spin it real quick. It's a very, very fast one in and out, but it's a bit of Superman and Lois Lane action.
Okay.
You let them handcuff you?
Wouldn't be much of a surrender if I resisted. And if it makes them feel more secure, then...
What's the S stand for?
It's not an S. On my world, it means hope.
Well, here it's an S. How about...
Sir?
Okay, can I just tell you that even that clip, as short as it was, was
boring
as anything else. Yes. How much, did you hear the...
Can I...
In my world, it means hope.
I want to write something, I want to read something. When I came home from that movie 9 days ago, I've been chomping at the bit to talk about this for 9 days. I wrote down these five words, managed to make Superman boring.
Right, how do you do that, man? You've got all that great, there's great stuff there.
I'll tell you how you do that.
Tell me.
And we haven't even gotten to this part of the movie yet, because we're talking about the various actors, and this Henry Cavill, I didn't think was good as Superman either. Yes, he's a big, giant, attractive hunk of a guy. Okay, fine, we get that. But he is not Superman. But here's the problem with this movie. Superman's adventures on Earth are what make Americans love Superman in the reality of the Superman story and in our experience as moviegoers. This doesn't really take place on Earth as much as it is an alien war movie. It's a battle between aliens, General Zod and Superman, who are both from Krypton, and they essentially are having space battles. Some of them come to Earth, but it's battles between these two aliens on our planet without humans really having much role in the story. Lois Lane, we don't really find her in trouble. Superman's supposed to be saving Lois Lane all the time. Perry White, played in this case by Lawrence Fishburne, in what has to be the smallest role of his career, has nothing to do in the movie.
Except get angry and agitated.
Yes, the other people who are in the movie, the humans, have virtually nothing to do. Kevin Costner, okay, as Clark Kent's father, But, and now here's a big problem for me.
Okay.
For most of my life, I've been in love with Diane Lane.
Okay.
In this movie, you see the older Diane Lane made up, and they make her look like an old woman. I don't want my Diane Lane with liver spots.
No.
I'm not saying that Diane Lane, the person, can't get old and age gracefully and have liver spots and all that sort of stuff.
Naturally.
I just don't want that in my screen, Diane Lane.
Hey, man, I had a crush on Lydia from Beetlejuice. My first crush was Winona Ryder. I almost spit at the screen when I saw the Star Trek reboot, and they made her look all old with all the lines and everything.
Yeah.
And you could see you could see the powder of the makeup coming off in the HD
yes,
and everything.
And in this, you could see the same thing on Diane Lane.
The more they make things so crystal clear for us to see, the more we see through all the BS.
Yes.
And it's distracting.
Here's the thing. These characters that they play are really supposed to be about my age. I'm in my mid-50s. They make them look like they're in their 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's because kids, they're doing it for the masses, and they're just, there's so many paint-by-number bits in this film that I wasn't expecting because they kept, you know, hyping. Oh, Christopher Nolan. Christopher Nolan's all over this. The man who did Batman Begins, the Dark Knight trilogy. Christopher Nolan stamped on this movie, man. He's all over it. I don't see anything except for a bit of darkness here and there. Oh, and by the way, dark, what's the opposite of dark? It's light, okay? So light, color. The color scheme in this movie was way, way distracting to me.
Yeah, it reaches all the way from gray to dark gray.
Right. No, and when you see Superman, that was the other thing, man. No one will ever be able to portray Superman the way Christopher Reeve did. Even before he passed away, people were still saying the same thing. They weren't saying it to kiss up to him. He was Superman.
Yes.
When you saw him, you knew in 1 second it was Superman. Yeah, the outfit. Maybe he looks like some kid in his jammies, but still, the outfit they did, the reconfiguration of Superman's suit, or whatever you want to call it,
yes,
was ridiculous. It was like dark midnight blue, and you could never really see the S. It was just an insult.
In this movie, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
It was like watching somebody try so hard to not make the Superman movie you expected, but still did all the cliche pitfalls of the origin story, and you're left wondering, why does it seem like I'm watching yet another apocalyptic movie where this big giant thing is invading a city that's pretty much New York, and there's nothing, you know, about it that makes it look like it's anything else? I like comic book movies when they're done in a world that doesn't seem real. The Dick Tracy movie, nobody really loves that, but when you watch that movie, you were in that city. Tim Burton's Batman films, that was a Gotham City unlike anything I'd ever seen before, and I've referenced Superman Returns, they made a realistic-looking metropolis.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't look like any city I'd ever seen before.
Yep.
This movie, I felt like I was watching Transformers 2, all right?
Because, that's a very good analogy.
Because sometimes you're like, well, wait, who's fighting who? Where are the real people at? Why am I just watching all this
That's what
chaos?
I'm saying. The humans are barely involved in this story. Plus, the plot of the villain Zod and what he and his people
secret
are trying to do on Earth. I don't want to spoil it for
right.
people who are going to go, although I would say don't go. But if you do and you can figure out what the hell it is there, that part of the story is about, I was completely lost.
It didn't seem to have the impact when Zod lets Superman know a little bit about his backstory.
Yeah.
It didn't really have any impact that I cared about.
No.
Not once did I go, oh, wow, that's really what's going on?
I also have another pet peeve here, and it's a similar one to, I think I mentioned this when we talked about the Star Trek movie.
Okay.
Which has Kirk fighting the bad guy with his fists.
Yes.
And then later, Spock fighting the bad guy with his fists. And, you know, they're punching and kicking and rolling around and that sort of stuff. And I thought to myself, really, when we get to the 23rd century, we're still going to be fighting like that? We've already invented advanced weapons in that world, phasers, where you don't have to kill the guy, you can stun him.
And then kick him when he's down.
Okay.
Or a robot arm that the fist jumps out 20 feet with just a push of a button. Or...
Yes. You'd think that we could get to that point. You could say, Siri, knock this guy out.
Yes.
And Siri would do it for you. You don't have to do it yourself. Well, what is this Superman movie come down to towards the end, for the most part? A long, extended fight between these two aliens, Superman and Zod, that takes place in and around these buildings, where they get hit so hard, they go flying through the buildings, and they knock buildings down, and stuff explodes and shatters, and it's all special effects, and it's all, I know, summertime blow-up time. I understand that, but it's bad movie making.
It's lazy because...
Lazy, too.
It's lazy when you see Superman and Zod flying around a cornfield. They go through a gas station. I specifically remember going through a gas station, a white car parked at the pump. Okay?
Yep.
It blows up.
Yep.
It's a good thing there wasn't a kid in the back seat. It's a good thing there wasn't somebody pumping gas at that time. I know the gas station was working. Otherwise, the gasoline would have ignited and the whole thing would have blown up. So it was an active gas station.
Right.
Where's the attendant? Who cares?
Here's how lame that chase and fight sequence was. I was waiting for there to be a fruit stand that got knocked over.
Or a man moving glass. A couple of guys moving glass and watermelons. Yes,
exactly. I cannot recommend one thing about this movie.
And I will tell you the biggest thing that just blows when it comes to Man of Steel, it was, for me, when it came to the first time I jumped into Batman Begins and the Dark Knight Trilogy, I had one little thing that just I could never, ever get over, and that was Danny Elfman's score for Batman is brilliant. And Hans Zimmer and all those guys, the only thing they did really good was the Why So Serious track off the Dark Knight. Otherwise, it just seemed like generic theme music. The Superman theme is iconic.
It's John Williams theme for the original Superman movie.
Yes. Now, I remember watching a documentary on Jaws, and they were interviewing one of the producers. They did a screening, and it was a lackluster screening. The movie had everything in it, finished product, but there was no score, and nobody reacted the way they wanted them to react. Once they put John Williams' score on, the very next time they screened it, it was off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
The music is key, I believe.
Yep.
You tell me they're spending like $300 million to make a Superman movie. They can't pay off John Williams. I mean, right now he's probably old and confused. Doesn't know anyway. He's waiting for Star Wars Episode 7 to show up on his doorstep.
Yep.
I'm telling you, they should have bucked up and gotten that score. But they had to separate themselves. They had to be so different than the other Superman stuff.
They did. They separated themselves. That was a good Superman movie. This is a bad Superman movie.
Can you hum the theme to Man of Steel?
No.
Nobody could.
No.
There's no way. But at a drop of a hat, anybody could do the original Superman theme. It's like Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's the Indiana Jones theme. It's John Williams. It's vital, and it's seriously missing in this movie. There's no triumphant Superman theme, and that, to me, just sucks it dry.
I agree. We'll take a break, and we'll go. By the way, you want to give us a from 0 to 10? Because I'm giving it a 1.
Okay, I was going with a 2, personally, just because some of the special effects are kind of cool. All right? They are, the way they do the whole, hey, father and son talking thing, two aliens talking, father and son, even though one's dead.
No, I didn't like that.
I thought that was a lot better than how they'd done it before, to me. So I give it a 2. That's a generous 2 out of 10.
I think it is as well. We should also point out, regardless of everything we've just said for the last 15 minutes, dissing this movie, it's going to make a huge amount of money this weekend. It'll be number 1 at the box office by far.
You never know, man. There's one other movie opening that could really split that when it comes to the 21 and ups.
Ooh, good tease. We'll talk about that when we come back in a moment here on the Big 550 KTRS. This is the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris here. On the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550. Did I just say the same thing 3 times? It seemed like it. Why don't you stop
me?
You're the producer.
Well, I thought people needed to know that.
Over and over.
Yeah, repeat it.
That was your job as a producer to make sure?
Yes.
Good job.
He had to weigh.
That's Dan, that's Ian, and this is Joe Hipperson, and we're talking about movies. And if you missed it, we just spent 15 minutes putting a shiv into Superman.
Yeah.
I've heard that.
A Krypton shiv.
I've heard that from everyone that has seen that.
Man of Steel.
Man of Steel is, don't go see it.
Man of, well, there's another S word you would use to say. Man of Suck. That's the S word we can use.
It sucks to suck.
So let's talk about a movie that we did enjoy this week, at least that I enjoyed. I haven't even asked you if you liked it.
Well, I'm going to say how apropos that Ian would come back with that song by Queen. You know why?
Why?
Because that's the song that plays in the end credits of a movie called Shaun of the Dead, one of the greatest zombie movies ever that just happened to be funny because it played everything right. It played it straight, and because it was so straight in the zombie outbreak, everything that then happened was even more hilarious because you totally bought into it.
Mm-hmm.
That was playing over the end credits of Shaun of the Dead, and This Is the End, to me, is the next best thing to watching Shaun of the Dead.
Wow.
A movie that takes the idea of the apocalypse and plays it very, very straight. And in my opinion, it's played very straight. And because of that, you also have the added bonus of all these actors, everybody knows, all playing a version of themselves.
Now, yesterday morning, I was filling in for McGraw, and I had a chance to have Craig Robinson who is Daryl on The Office and was a voice on The Cleveland Show and was in Hot Tub Time Machine. He's one of the people who is in this movie essentially playing himself. I struggled in trying to explain on the air the plot of this movie.
James Franco has got a big, giant party. A couple people go out, hit the store. Right when they do that, the apocalypse basically begins, right? Like the Four Horsemen apocalypse, like raining down on human civilization.
Mm-hmm. Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Yeah. Nice, Venkman. So what plays out then is, what would it be like if the apocalypse actually hit and did so in a very scary way, and you just happen to be seeing it from the point of view of actors you feel you know anyway because of the society we live in now with media and whatnot? I mean, who doesn't know James Franco? I mean, we all feel that we might kind of know the guy. You know,
we certainly gave it to him when the Oz movie came out.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody needs a paycheck every once in a while, man. Okay.
Yeah.
To me, I forgive James Franco for Oz when I see him in This Is the End. And I don't want to confuse anybody. There's another movie coming out in August, August 23rd, called The World's End, which is not this movie, but I'm very much looking forward to that just because I wanted to tie in the Shaun of the Dead connection, okay. Nick Frost, Simon Pegg. Don't be confused on that one. But This Is the End, if you find it very funny when you feel that Hollywood royalty or whatever they, if you want to call these guys Hollywood royalty now, if you like it when they make fun of themselves or you want to laugh at them or you think Michael Cera is just a DB and you want to, you know, see him just get slapped around, it's hilarious.
Well, let's mention who's in this. Seth Rogen stars in it, co-directed it, and co-wrote it with his friend from childhood, a guy by name of Evan Goldberg, who's not in the movie. He's just a writer and director. So Seth Rogen, James Franco, Danny McBride, Craig Robinson, Jonah Hill, and cameo appearances by Michael Cera.
Rihanna,
and Emma Watson from the Harry Potter movies.
Yeah.
Who, incidentally, very funny in this movie.
No, hilarious. Hilarious. And you mentioned Danny McBride, too, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because his entrance into the film, just brilliant. I mean, I don't want to spoil anything about the movie except to say it's one of those films that if you caught a trailer on TV for This Is the End, this is one of those rare times where you didn't see anything that made us
because
love
you can't
and laugh
put,
at this movie.
We cannot play you a clip from this movie that lasts more than 15 seconds. There's nothing they can put on TV that will tell you what this movie is about. I will tell you, Ian and his wife are going to go see this movie tonight, and I told him, you're the kind of person that will enjoy this movie because he and I went to see the original Jackass movies together, and we knew we were not grossed out by those movies.
I have no shock factor left.
Okay. You remember those movies, Dan?
Yes, I do.
Okay. This one would make the guys from Jackass go, whoa, really? That's a little bit far.
Wow.
You agree?
Oh, Joe? No, I would definitely agree.
If you don't want to see a raunchy movie, don't go see this. Raunch is an understatement here.
I feel bad saying this because I want to always feel like I'm keeping it real to the audience because I really want to be, I want to be cool to the audience, mm-hmm. man. I really do. This could have or should have, maybe is a better way to put it, been an NC-17 movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just for
the Danny McBride, James Franco argument.
Exactly. Okay. Because what they talk about this. Okay.
We can't tell you. On a federally licensed broadcast facility, there is no way for us to describe what we're talking about to you, and we apologize for that.
No, I brought in a clip from Man of Steel. I was actually going to just make a 15-second series of beeps. I was going to bring that in, too, and say, hey, I got a clip for the movie. It's the only part we can play. I really almost did that, but it's very, very well done because during the entire length of the movie, they never really nod to you, the audience, and stop playing it straight, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And because we know they're playing themselves or a variation of themselves, there's never that wink to the audience of, oh, hey, we're just making a silly movie about the end of the world. The end of the world bit, the apocalypse bit, that I love, is played so straight, so real, that everything else then actually has a sense of danger to it. Aziz, I'm sorry, okay?
Yes.
I find that got to be very, very funny.
Yes.
I found what happened to him to be even funnier.
Yes, I agree.
It was just so, so well done.
I agree. There are other cameos in here. Let's not give away any more of this movie.
Okay. I can't say anything then.
I know. If we don't tell you who's in it, then that's all we can tell you. But again, don't go. See, here's what I don't want to get. I don't want to get email from people saying, we heard you like that movie, so we went to see it on your recommendation.
I've never been more disgusted.
Yeah, it was gross. Well, I know.
Yeah.
That's what I'm telling you here. But I'm also going to tell you, I laughed out loud at this movie. And it's very rare that I'm in a movie theater surrounded by a lot of other people at a screening. A couple of hundred people are in there, and I'm laughing out loud at the screen.
I will say the reason for that is because if you go into it, a lot of times you go to see a comedy, and you can see the setup for the gag that you've already seen in the trailer. And you don't laugh like you did when you saw the trailer.
Yeah.
This doesn't exist in this movie for what we've already pointed out.
Right.
Because the greatest bits of this flick are the stuff that you can't show on TV.
Yeah.
I don't even think you put them on YouTube unless you, you know, got some kind of weird secret password to watch this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm being dead serious. In this movie, if you don't love it, there's a serious problem.
No, I'm fully in.
Now, you know,
to enjoy.
You realize that we've blown it for him and for our audience because we built it up too much.
No, actually, we have built it up too much. Well, because I'm trying to think of a negative.
Oh, I'll tell you a negative. I think the last half hour. Without saying what happens in the last half hour, I think the last half hour, it falls apart. I think that Rogan and Goldberg, in writing the movie, came up with some hysterically funny stuff and convinced their friends to go along with it because they essentially called these actors. Craig Robinson told me this yesterday morning. They called him and said, here's what we want to do. Are you in? And they all said, yeah, I'm definitely in. Why don't we also do this? And they took it to the next level with that. But after about an hour or 70, maybe 75 minutes of that, it kind of, you're pretty much done with that, and then they try to have this resolution to the movie that was not satisfactory to me.
I will agree with that. It's almost as if they're like, hey, let's go into this cave. It's going to be awesome. And we watch as they keep going until they realize we don't have any way out.
Yeah,
we need a magic
bulldozer. We're way deep inside a cave.
And basically, we need to get a magic bulldozer that comes out of nowhere that can shoot through the other side. Now we're free. That's the best analogy I can do for how they wrote themselves out of the movie, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I agree.
But outside of that, it's still, just talked Man of Steel earlier. Man of Steel is 2 hours and 23 minutes long, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Almost a 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah.
This one clocks in at 1 hour, 47 minutes. And still could have been trimmed a little bit, but it's still a heck of a lot easier to watch this movie, and you'll enjoy this movie, and you'll walk out with some of the coolest lines you and your friends will quote at parties to come for years. I'm serious. Things we can't talk about now.
0 to 10?
I give this a very, very, very strong 9 on a 0 to 10 scale.
Okay, I have 2 different ratings for this.
That's not fair. I didn't know I could have 2.
Okay, if you're me, this movie is a 9. If you're my wife, this movie is a 0.
That's perfectly explained.
I'll bow. Okay, I see where you're going with that.
My wife would never, ever, 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 ever enjoy this movie, ever. And that's fine, by the way.
Right.
You know what? It's a solid 9 for me, and I will say that if I asked my mom to go watch this movie, I would never be invited to a family get-together ever again.
You're out of the will. Are you kidding me?
That's my best way of doing it. So, yeah, I agree with your findings.
Now, let me mention one other movie that's opening this weekend, which I understand you've not seen, called The East.
True.
Okay. I went to a screening of this at the Tivoli, and that tells you a little bit about what kind of movie it is.
Okay.
Even artier than the Plaza Frontenac movies. That's, you know, in our town, the Tivoli is the artiest of the arty movies.
Hoity toity.
Well.
No, that's Frontenac.
First of all, the movie stars a woman by the name of Britt Marling, who I know from only one thing. Do you remember the Richard Gere movie, Arbitrage?
Oh, yes.
From last year? She played his daughter.
Okay.
And was pretty good in that. I have never seen her in anything else that I know of anyway. And she wrote, and I think with her boyfriend, he directed it. So the two of them are responsible for this movie. She plays a woman who works not for the CIA, but for a private security firm. And their job is to try to help save the reputations of major companies against people who are out there who are trying to say bad things about them, do bad things about them. She is therefore asked by this company, by her boss, Patricia Richardson, to infiltrate this underground group who they're kind of like an environmentalist group and a humanist group, and they want to point out the evils that are being done by an oil company, B, a pharmaceutical company, those sort of things.
So she's like an undercover PR agent? Kind of. All right.
So she goes undercover and she gets involved with this group, and the group is called The East. Thus the name. There's no reason for it to be called The East, but it is. And so she infiltrates this group and becomes involved with the people in the group as they pull off what they call these jams, these big events where they go and they pull off a stunt that makes the people from this big corporation look bad. And of course, they have their iPhones out and they're videotaping it, and they then put that stuff out there. And, you know, they send it to the news media and they put it online, and they essentially want to show these people up by doing things to those big companies that make them look bad.
Like a black guy in the public eye, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Like flash mobbing, stuff like that.
Exactly, that sort of stuff. But it's cleverly done. I will tell you this. This movie is very clever. And Ellen Page, who you know from Juno, she plays one of the people who's in this cult. And Alexander Skarsgård?
Skarsgård, I thought.
Okay, so he's in that group as well. And they're both pretty good. And this Britt Marling, she's a terrific actress. I was actually impressed by her. Here's the problem. The movie's too long and nobody's going to see it. It's not a horrible movie.
Is it star power?
There's no real star power in it except for those three people I mentioned, and I don't think any of them qualifies as star power.
What I mean is
none of them can open a movie.
What I mean is if you were to put like a bigger name star in that movie, would people maybe enjoy it a bit better?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. The plot can be a little bit confusing. But what they do is clever, and it also is a little bit preachy about this. It's obvious that Britt Marling is on the side, as a writer, of these groups that are trying to expose the bad stuff that big corporations are doing. And she has some good points in there, but it gets a little bit preachy in there. So I'm going to give it a 6.
So a 6 out of 10 for The East, a movie that's not that good. No one's really going to see it.
No one's going to see it. And the bad news is more people are going to see Superman, a movie that out and out sucks, than this movie, which is just okay.
Let's just clarify. Man of Steel. Superman was directed by Richard Donner, and it's still a good movie.
Yes.
And Lex Luthor, Gene Hackman, still nothing wrong with
it. Great villain.
Yeah. And Marlon Brando.
General Zod, great villain.
And Marlon Brando, Krypton, good stuff.
Fine.
Fine.